Nisambulavinaka Pacific Wave listeners, Koroy Hawkins here. Because of COVID-19 lockdown here in New Zealand, we can't bring you our usual daily show, and we're really sorry about that. It stinks, and we'll be back in your feed as soon as we can, but while we can't make our usual shows, it doesn't mean we're not covering Pacific news. Each night, I talk about some of the day's stories with RNZ Night's host, Brian Crump. Here's one of our chats.
Koroy Hawkins is joining me now for another Pacific Chat. Kia ora, Koroy. Welcome back to Nights.
Hello, Brian. Good to be back.
Bougainville. It's the 20th anniversary of a peace agreement. I didn't realise it was so long ago, Koroy.
Yeah. Such a massive, massive part of Melanesian Pacific history of the conflict. People, I think, forget how big it was, like 1988 to 1998, that's a decade of fighting. And, the estimates are like up to 20,000 Bougainvillians killed, although lower estimates are as low as 2,000. But, yeah, it's a huge, huge conflict that even growing up in the Western Province in Solomon Islands, I remember the boats coming over and the stories from the uncles of the Bougainvillians ending up in our hospitals and being protected, fleeing from the fighting in Bougainville and neighboring Papua New Guinea. So they're marking 20 years of the peace agreement that ended all that. The president of the autonomous Bougainville region, which has been given some autonomy since the conflict and through that agreement, Ishmael Torama, has said it set the foundation for peace and opened the way for Bougainville to pursue self-determination, which you mentioned in that talking about this evening. I heard you saying there, Brian, there was that massive referendum where 97% was close, almost 100% voted for independence. So that process is underway as well, which is quite an important part of this agreement.
Given the mandate that referendum got last year, how much pressure is there for this process to be quick, or are people reasonably patient about it?
They've handled it quite well. Like they were initially saying, like it's going to take a really, really long time. Like even going up to the referendum question, they were already sort of drilling home that message that this is going to be overnight. So I think they've been quite patient in that sense. But since they started cooking, so the process is that the Papua New Guinea National Parliament has to sign off on this. And so they're in discussions with the autonomous Bougainville government. But Bougainville has actually set a timeline. They want it done by 2025, between 2025 and 2027 for a final political settlement. So that kind of sets a clock running. And there have been really, really mixed reactions in Papua New Guinea. Some saying it should just go away, go on straight away. And the Bougainvillians have been asking for this for a long time and should be given what they want. And others questioning whether, as you know, Papua New Guinea is already quite fractured in terms of the tribes and different provinces and the differences between the different provinces. So whether this will sort of be a domino effect in terms of starting other provinces thinking about, well, if they're going to be independent, maybe we want to be our own little country. So yeah, there's that concern as well going on.
How key are resources in all this? And the resources that are underground in Bougainville?
Yeah, it's Panguna, the massive Panguna mine, obviously the start of the conflict. Some have seen it as the only way for Bougainville again to achieve independence, to go through the minerals in the ground. But others are saying it should look further afield, it should broaden the economic base more to agriculture, fisheries, and look at all that kind of thing. But yeah, still. A lot of mineral wealth in the ground in Bougainville, but there are obviously the government, the traditional landowners, and the mining party still are not fully all on the same page in terms of how to get that going or who's going to be pulling the strings or who gets the benefits even of that wealth if it does come out of the ground.
It's a dumb question, Koroy. It's a copper mine, isn't it?
I'm going to say yes. I guess I'm pretty sure it is a copper mine, but that isn't the only mineral, as you know, with mining in Papua New Guinea. I'm sure there were other minerals as well coming out of Bougainville and are available on Bougainville. But yeah, the Panguna definitely was a copper mine.
Further west, and this is something we talked about last week, the West Papuan political prisoner, Victor Yemo, who is not well, and Indonesian authorities are what? Still saying he's he has to stay in jail, even if others are saying he needs hospital treatment urgently?
Yes, yes. We're having quite some disturbing reports coming through today. Human rights people that have been calling for his health to be looked at and for him to be taken off these accusations and legal trials say that he was actually getting medical treatment and in hospital and begged to stay on and was actually pulled out of hospital while still getting medical treatment to go back into jail. So some disturbing imagery there of how desperate Victor Yemo is to get medical treatment. And the issue here is the courts, because he pleaded with the judges, as we talked about last week, that his health was failing and that he really needed medical attention. And they ordered that he be given that medical treatment. But his lawyers are saying now that they have actually, prosecutors are deliberately defying, is the word they're using, the court order, and that he's still in isolated detention. And they're really concerned that with his serious medical condition, that he could actually die without treatment.
What's the medical problem he's dealing with at the moment?
So he has we were saying, some lung diseases and other illnesses associated. But the other thing is, he's even the diagnosis. He said he had tests and they hadn't even given him a diagnosis on what was wrong with him. And the document that his counsel were presenting to the courts and the prosecution was the hospital said, just saying that he needed to be admitted immediately. Yeah, this is on top of the fact that human rights advocates are saying that he's being charged with treason and incitement for an alleged role in anti-racism protests that he's denied, that he hasn't been part of, that turned into riots in 2019. And so his health is a major concern now, but also he could get life if this goes through in terms of the court process for something that he says he wasn't involved in.
Where is he imprisoned?
So I believe it is Jayapura. I might be wrong. I might be wrong on that. I probably won't be wrong. But they're saying that the advocate for his release is saying that he's being prosecuted for his political views rather than anything that he's actually done, which is a concern.
Jayapura, dumb question, is in West Papua or further west in the Indonesian archipelago?
So it's in the province called just Papua, the one closer to Papua New Guinea. West Papua, they've split them in two. West Papua is the higher end. But we all, like, more commonly refer to the whole region as West Papua, but it's the Papua regions of Indonesia, I think, is what we're using at the moment.
Is the Cook Islands still COVID-19 free?
I was trying to look around and check, but from everything I know, it is. What I wanted to talk about today was that the subsidies were being kicking in for businesses. So from the best of my knowledge, it remains COVID-free, still only letting Kiwi tourists leave the island, but no one coming back in. And obviously today, after the New Zealand government's announcement was when they were going to make theirs, so we'll probably be getting those updates overnight going into tomorrow is when we'll probably be getting the releases from government. But they've started their support for businesses, and that's what the Prime Minister Mark Brown said, was that he said the best way to do this was short and sharp support as well. So he's only going for initially for August, September support, and then October if New Zealand continues to stay in lockdown. So he's looking at a short-term cash injection for providers at the moment. And he still claims that the economy is in a recovery mode, is what he's saying.
Cook's businesses will be looking closely at the Auckland figures as businesses in the South Island, won't they? Tourist businesses there. It's pretty key as a market, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Actually, yeah, not just for Cook's, obviously. quite a lot of people locked up in there, and not just Auckland, Northland until Thursday, still locked up. So, yeah, hopefully, and even us at level three is quite once we go down to level three, is quite restricted for another week.
What about Fiji, Croy?
In Fiji, I had over the weekend, I was quite interesting to see the country's chief medical advisor was saying they're expecting COVID-19 to be just part of their endemic diseases, and they're just pushing for that mass vaccination and then just preparing to live with it. He was saying that they don't feel like they can ever go down to a COVID-free status again. So that's quite an indication of how serious things are in terms of the spread of COVID there. Update today that was quite worrying was an important, really highly populated province, a border access into the capital Suva, the Sewanee border, has been closed for decontamination. So people are having to go a long way out of their way to get to the main essential services for government. It's something like over 100,000 people living in Ngāti Siri, which is like the second most populous province in Fiji. So this is closing this border route is really a big problem for them. And we're also getting reports of concerns, which I understand will be filing more on tomorrow as well, of concerns with kids getting sick with COVID and some dying as well in their stats over the weekend. So Fiji's really looking strongly at starting to vaccinate children, it looks like. So we'll be hearing that overnight as well out of Fiji.
And what about Solomon Islands?
Solomon Islands is COVID-free, but on Sunday they started this trial lockdown.
Yes, that's right. That's what I was curious about there. I forgot to mention that, but that's yes.
They're in that trial lockdown right now, and I just got a statement from police saying that they've arrested 20 people overnight for breaching lockdown exercises. And remember, we had this discussion about the legality concerns around arresting people in a mock lockdown, in a lockdown trial. That some legal minds in the country were saying there might not be grounds for arresting people in a lockdown where there's no threat of COVID in the community. So they've arrested 20 people already overnight. They've also had problems with people throwing rocks at police vehicles. So they've had a few rock-throwing incidents throughout the lockdowns.
Did they get arrested as well?
It looks like they're among the people that were arrested. Vandals, but also maybe just frustrated with some of the restrictions in place. But the police have condemned it as people that are misbehaving and saying that, look, the vehicles that are going around aren't just police. It's frontline workers like health workers and people trying to keep the country safe. So that's been condemned as well. Yeah, but already it's, overnight day one, 20 arrests. So it goes on till Tuesday. And last time they had quite a bit of difficulty getting some of those cases through court. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this in terms of that legal argument.
What is the government hoping to achieve with this?
So it's saying it's testing its systems, like testing how it would react if a case happened, making sure that things are working properly. It's hard to say, but basically they're saying that they're making sure that if they lock down, they want to see how able are they to enforce it. Do people comply? Would people comply properly? And they've actually revised it and made it stricter for Delta. So that's the difference as well to what they had in place previously, which they also tested when COVID first came out last year and had a similar issues with people breaching the lockdowns.
As long as they don't, when they have the real thing, which hopefully they don't, people were so annoyed with this test run that they don't bother complying then.
Yeah, it is dangerous. It's kind of a boy cried wolf kind of scenario as well, isn't it? So hopefully it works out. And remember, this is just in the capital, Honiara, not the whole country. So it's in the capital city, but this is being.
I wonder how many people shot through. to avoid the lockdown.
It is a land border to the nearby, like on the rest of the island. Guadalcanal province is not locked down. So, yeah, you could drive, literally drive a couple of, probably not even 100K out of town and be happily not locked down for the weekend.
Finally, and I'm sorry I'm asking about French Polynesia, but I don't think I could ignore it given the number of cases there. Is there any sign of things is flattening there, the number, the increase, or are we talking about a similar situation to Fiji with the authorities saying, right, it's here and that's that?
Yeah, they haven't said that, but they are. The main hospital has reached out to France again. They've actually asked the president, Emmanuel Macron, for national solidarity and send more personnel to deal with the COVID outbreak there. So more than 400 coronavirus patients are admitted in the territory's hospitals, and almost 300 in the main hospital in Papeete. So pretty bad. There's been a bit of a problem with reporting. The government's been reporting tests taken, but not the stats, that not the results. So there's been a bit of an issue with that. It's throwing the WHO tally off because they're reporting French Polynesia joining other places with zero cases, but it's because the government isn't reporting back on the results of tests. So the last that we have are 15 people that have died of COVID-19. So the death toll now at 385 and 412 in hospital care, which we've just said. So yeah, so we're still out of info in terms of what the results of the last lot of tests have been in French Polynesia. But as we said last week, this is 10 times the case numbers have exploded at a rate 10 times faster than in mainland France. And so there have already been some personnel sent from France and New Caledonia, but they still need more help apparently because the infection rates remain so high.
Karoy, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks, Brian. Always a pleasure.
That's Karoy Hawkins from RNZ Pacific, back with another Pacific Chat around about 8:15 tomorrow on RNZ National Nights.
That's our Pacific Waves chat with Nights host Brian Crump for today. We'll be back to normal programming as soon as New Zealand comes out of lockdown. Remember, you can listen to us free on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, or any podcast platform. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating so others can also find us. Ka kite anō.